Hi everyone, this is Shilpa from Red Hat, and here is my colleague Pritha. I was also in Red Hat, and we both work as storage software developers. Our topic for today is what's new in Ceph Rados Gateway in the upcoming release Pacific and beyond. Next slide. So here are the topics of today's talk. So there are multi-site enhancements, bucket notifications, zipper, S3 select, encryption, and D3N caching, Lua scripting. Next one. It's an introduction to Ceph. What is Ceph? Ceph is an open source software defined storage. It runs on commodity hardware, and there is no vendor lock-in. It is distributed and highly scalable in nature. It provides a unified interface for object, block, and file system. Next slide, please. So what is Ceph Object Gateway or Rados Gateway? It's an object store client to a Ceph cluster that exposes RESTful S3 and Swift API. Librados is the API used to build on top of. Rados Gateway handles things like user accounts, ACLs, and buckets. It supports two HTTP protocols. One is a civet web and the other is beast. So it stores data in buckets in the form of objects. Buckets have a flat namespace, unlike a file system like hierarchy. And objects are immutable. That is, once they are uploaded, the data cannot be modified, but they can only be re-uploaded as new objects. So for example, videos and audio files. Rados Gateway supports a majority of Amazon S3 features like multi-part uploads, object versioning, lifecycle policies, object encryption, compression, static website, and a lot more. Next one. So multi-site enhancements is the first topic. Object replication provides geographical redundancy with async data replication. It is eventually consistent, so it is an asynchronous copy of data between multiple clusters running Rados Gateway. The following are the enhancements that have been planned for Pacific and future releases. The first one is data sync optimizations, which allow sites with a large backlog of stale data log entries to recover much faster. The triggers of a bucket sync, like data log entries or error repo entries and async notifications, were all previously unbounded, meaning that bucket sync had to catch up completely before they could be retired. So each trigger will now carry a timestamp, allowing them to be ignored once bucket sync status reaches that timestamp. The next one is the offloading of data log from OMAP into FIFO queues over Rados. Currently, the multi-site logs exist in OMAP. So it's a bit of a bottleneck. Push and trim workloads leads to a lot of compactions. So for cheaper log trimming at scale, they are offloaded to FIFO. Currently, data log is ready in Pacific. Metadata and BI log are also planned, and they are under work for future releases. So the last one is dynamic resharding with multi-site. Currently in a multi-site environment, dynamic resharding is disabled. This is mainly because replication logs for multi-site are also stored along with the keys that they modify. So we can't reshard these log entries like we do with normal keys, because other zones need to keep track, keep their position, track of the position in the logs. So if we shuffle these log entries, then there would be no, for the other zones, there would be no way of tracking their markers. So when resharding buckets, we need to preserve the old bucket index logs. So this is with the new design, we'll be preserving the old bucket index logs. so that other zones can finish their processing their bucket their entries, and the new events are recorded in the new bucket index logs. So work is currently underway and it should be soon getting merged. In addition to these, there is sync and info providers that simplify the sync code, providing better abstraction. So as to make it easier to sync from external cloud providers. So syncing from external cloud providers is the main motivation behind this project. And it might be added sometime in the future release after Pacific. The next slide. It's about Project Zipper. So it's an RGW layering API. The goal of Zipper is to create an API that can be used to separate the RGW top end, which is represented by Swift and S3, from bottom end providers. So currently it is Rados, but moving forward it would be cloud, file, and even memory backends. So this should allow the front ends to access any implemented backends transparently. So there are four primary handle types that were planned initially. That's a store, a user, a bucket, and an object handle. A store is mainly responsible for creating other handles and for providing access to layer local data and code to those handles, to those above and below them. A user is a handle that represents an authentication point for things like permissions and quota checking. And it is also intended to allow a layer to do user mapping between an S3 user and a user that is attached to whatever backend we use. A bucket is a handle that represents a container of objects, and this will be almost used in every operation. So some parts of Zipper are in Pacific, but it is not yet complete. An experimental database backend is being worked on. So the final result will be able to run RGW on database backend store with no Rados at all. So the SME working on this is Daniel from Red Hat. Next one, please. The next one is bucket notification, which already exists currently. But the new addition would be persistent notifications. So bucket notification provides a mechanism for sending information out of Rados gateway when certain events are happening on the bucket. Publishers communicate asynchronously with the subscribers by sending messages to a topic, which is basically a logical access point and a communication channel. So clients can subscribe to the topic and receive published messages using some supported protocols. And currently we support messaging services like AMQP, RabbitMQ, and Kafka. So if you would want notifications for creation or deletion of objects in Ceph object store. So for this, a user has to create topics on each bucket with push endpoint parameters, create a notification entity for the event types, and we can even filter out events based on prefix or suffix and regular expression matching of the keys. A REST API is defined to provide configuration and control interfaces for the bucket notification mechanism. The events are stored in JSON formats. So in Pacific release, notifications can also be sent asynchronously. They will be first committed into persistent storage until they are acknowledged, and then asynchronously sent to the topic's configured endpoint. So that brings me to the end of my section. Pritha will be taking over from the next one. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Shilpa. So the next topic of discussion is SPSelect, which is another feature upcoming in Pacific. So about SPSelect, So traditionally, an object is retrieved in its entirety from the storage cluster, and then applications extract useful information from it. S3 Select allows applications to use SQL expressions to extract only a subset of relevant information from the object. This greatly improves latency and throughput. The bigger the object is and the more selective the query is, the better is the performance, since fewer bytes have to be sent back to the application. As for example, an aggregation query will outperform a query that fetches information about a column of data. So currently, S3 Select Engine has been implemented in RGW that performs the query processing. But in future, the query processing may be pushed down to a CLS module in the OSD to further speed up things. At present, RGW supports S3 Select queries only on CSV file format. An example of an S3 Select query is shown in this slide, where the customer ID can be selected from an S3 object based on the ages of the customer. A PR for PyKey file format is already in progress, and JSON file format will be considered in future. The documentation link for the S3 Select feature is up here on this slide, which contains all the details about the feature as well as the code snippets, etc. And the subject matter expert is Gal Salomon from Red Hat for this feature. Another exciting upcoming feature in Pacific is Lua scripting. This feature allows a user to upload Lua scripts in different RGW contexts. So there are two RGW contexts. One is pre-request, which is before the operation is taken, and the other is post-request, after the operation is taken. So these scripts address requests for users belonging to a specific tenant. The scripts allow to read as well as to modify fields in the request. There are several use cases of this feature. The request can be written to debug logs via these scripts. The request can also be sent to ops log in RDW. The request can also be sent to an external entity via any transport mechanism which is supported by Lua. Another interesting use case of this feature is that XATRs can be added to an object by a client using these scripts. The script management is completely done via Radis Gateway admin commands. The commands support uploading a script, reading it back, and then removing it. Lua package management is also done via Radis Gateway admin commands. Although by default, all the Lua modules are already present in the script, but if at all a need arises for additional Lua modules, then we can add the packages to the allow list. And in order for these new packages to be installed, RGW needs to be restarted. The Radis Gateway admin commands allow a package to be added to an allow list, to be deleted from an allow list, or to be listed from the allow list. And the details of all the supported request fields and code samples are given in the link shown in the slide here. And the subject matter expert for this feature is Yuval from Red Hat. The next topic that I'm going to talk about is encryption. So currently, RGW supports server-side encryption and encrypts objects using customer-provided keys, where key is passed along with the request or by using a key management service which stores the encryption key. Now, to add to the above, work is in progress. There is an ongoing PR to support KMIP as key stored with Ceph. And the implementations of KMIP that are being considered are IBM SKLM or Vault. There is another ongoing PR to provide transit encoding, where key management service owns the keys and the encrypted data is stored in Ceph. And context is provided as input for key generation by KMS. The next phase of work is SS3SK, in which Ceph creates and manages the encryption key. And future work will be to integrate transit-like encoding and context with other key management stores. Currently, there is no integrity checking. We just do plain CVC. So with better address encryption, SLICE integrity check data will be added to data address and will be used while decrypting the data. So the next topic here is D3N caching, and D3N stands for Data Center Scale Delivery Network. This is a project which is done by students of Boston University in collaboration with Red Hat, and this is still ongoing. So the diagram here shows a typical enterprise data center with some object storage nodes forming a data lake and compute clusters that fetch data sets from the data lake to analyze them. There are latencies in accessing data from the data lake because of network congestion and oversubscription of the data center net. So based on the access pattern of data, like high data reuse, uneven popularity of data, and changing file popularity over time, led to the solution being caching on the access side of the network. The main aim is to prevent accesses to the storage cluster or the data lake and to maximize the throughput. So for this, the design proposal consists of multiple levels of caches. L1 caches can be local in nature, and then L2 and L3 caches can be logically distributed. So all the L1 and L2 and L3 caches are implemented on the NVMe SSD, although they are logically separate. This diagram shows an L1 cache, which is local to each RDW process, and L2 cache is a distributed cache. Data is first looked up in L1 cache, and if it isn't found there, then it is looked up in L2 cache, and so on. So the current focus of work is L1 cache, and then after that, L2 cache will be worked upon. So this slide shows some of the important configurables for tuning the D3N cache. One is related to enabling the cache, and the second one is related to setting the persistent path of the cache, and then deciding the size of the cache, and so on. So this brings us to the end of our talk, and thank you everyone for listening to us.